I'm Jim Schultz, and this is From Theory to Practice. Welcome to the show today. Welcome to the broadcast. Welcome to the Tuesday Uncle Jay edition of what it is that we're trying to do. I think he might still be talking, or he got done just recently. I think it was a 1:15 start for Uncle Jay. Emergency meeting. QE is back, and yet, guys, the market doesn't like it. Let's pop in here. Let's have a little look-see. No, I think he was just giving some talk at some university somewhere. You got even the S&P is down 4 on the day. Let me grab my drawing tools here. Even the S&P is down 4. Risk-free asset doing what risk-free assets should do, up 30. Got the boomers up 99, now up a little bit over 100 on the day. Got the Russell 2000 futures index still down 8.5. Got bonds down 16 ticks, trading the 113 handle. Man, I don't know what he said. I think he said higher for longer. I think he said QE is over. Like, I think he said, let's barrel down the hatches or batten down the hatches or do something with those hatches because it's going to get kind of ugly out there. But yeah, market overall, gold loves it, of course, up 19 points here today. You've got the British pound is down. You've got the euro is down. You've got everything is just down. You got the market is so weak that volatility is even down 80 cents here on the day. So pretty crazy stuff with Uncle Jay, but welcome to the show. Thank you guys for being here. I am so humbled that so many of you guys take time out of your day to spend time with all of our shows, not only my show, but the other great shows that we have here on the network. If you're watching over on the Tasty Live Network, then I would actually migrate over to YouTube for the time being, just while this show is live in real time, because you have a unique opportunity to communicate with your brethren that are also watching the show. You can troll me with questions, you can troll me with comments, stories, or jokes. I will welcome and encourage them all. So I would do that if it's real time, Tuesday, April 16th, right around 2:00 Eastern time. So there's some market commentary for you. Probably not going to move the needle on your P&L at the end of the day, but nevertheless, we did it anyway. So get your questions in the chat box. I'll try to get to as many as I can here in the next few minutes. But what I really wanted to focus on today was, a couple of things. Number one, the premium across the board, man, just in the indexes, it's looking pretty good. Now, if you look at IV ranks over here, like you see, we've got SPY 65, you've got QQQ, right, 64, you've got IWM, right, 89, you've got DIA, right, 71, I mean, TLT, you've got 31, so that's a little bit on the lower end, but that's crazy that we're talking about a 31, 32 IV rank being low. Like, it's been a minute since we've been talking about 31, 32 being low relative to the other options that are available in the market. Normally, we're like, ooh, 31. Like, we've been hanging out like the 7 to 10 range for quite some time. So I'll definitely take some 31. Market rallying now, NASDAQ up 60. Boomers up 160. So Russell almost unched on the day. And so that is encouraging. Maybe QE is back. That would make sense, given the fact that we are like a point and a half off of all-time highs now. So I think it is time to fire up the printing press. But either way, from a premium selling standpoint, you've got pretty good IV ranks across the board. Now, looking at the portfolio that we have here, you can see we already have some index exposure with MES, MNQ, and IWM. And so I don't necessarily want to be in a hurry to add a bunch more premium in the overall market-wide indexes because we already have exposure in S&P 500 through MES, NASDAQ through MNQ, and then IWM, the Russell 2000 through IWM. And so I don't necessarily feel the need to like double up on like SPY or QQQ or something like that. But I do want to maybe take a quick little gander at what might be transpiring there in the overall indexes. So we're going to do that first. And then second, I want to talk about something that you all brought to my attention maybe a week or two. And then I continued the conversation with Mr. Tom Sosnoff yesterday morning on the Skinny and Options abstract applications, where we were talking about the buying power relief that you get with futures options and then the buying power expansion or potential expansion with those future options. And I don't really have an answer for you today, not other than what Tom kind of brought to my doorstep yesterday. But let's be honest, it's usually only about a 40 delta that whatever Tom says is actually true. And so we're going to kind of put that under the microscope here today. And I don't know if that's going to help us. I don't really think we're going to get any definitive answers, but let's take a look at the indexes really quick to see if we can find some more opportunities to maybe do a little something with some short premium. So again, MES, MNQ, IWM, I'm not going to do anything with any of these because I already have positions on in them, and those positions are doing pretty well. In fact, the rally today that's just got started, basically, you've got NASDAQ now up 100. You've got E-mini S&Ps up 16. So that was about a 20-point turnaround in the E-mini S&Ps in about the last 4.5 minutes. And so that is a pretty impressive turnaround indeed. And so you've got green in the market indexes, which is good for our strangles because you can see the P&L on the day for MES, we're up a couple of bucks. You can see the P&L on the day for MNQ, we're up, a little bit more than a couple of bucks, which is nice because we're essentially, recentering ourselves right into the middle of the strikes on the short strangle. So that's good. That's a positive thing. That's what we want, of course. And so we can sit tight, we can do nothing, which of course is our favorite strategy. So IWM, similar type of situation where we're only up a little bit on the day. You can see that right over there. And our strikes are 188 and 223 in terms of 188 put and a 223 call. And so you've got IWM at 196. This is nice. I mean, IWM up a little bit now, up 30 cents. We could use it up, a couple of bucks would be really nice in terms of centering between the strikes. So market wide, I'm not in a hurry to do anything, but let's just take a peek, man. Let's just have a tiny little peek and kind of see what's going on. So the only index really that we could do something in would be DIA because, like I said, we already have exposure in the other major equity indexes of S&P 500, NASDAQ, and the Russell 2000. So if I go into DIA, unfortunately, there's the YM futures, right? So these are the big dogs. These are your E-mini Dows. We're not going to do that. There is, I believe it's MYM. MYM, these are your micro Dows. So these are the little big dogs. But the problem is there's no options for MYM. So I'm not going to do anything with this right now because I'm very intrigued at the options on the futures, not necessarily the outrights on the futures. So like doing just directional plays, we'll probably do that at some point, but we're not doing that. We're not doing that right now. So MYM is not going to be an option for us. So we have to go to the crusty old stale DIA, which is like so 1993 at this point, but we got to do it, man. So DIA 1993, that was when the boomers, man, they were just in their prime. They were just crushing it in 1993, and they're crushing it in 2023. So in 1993, when they're all like, early 30s, early 40s, mid 50s, I mean, they were just absolutely just dominating everything. And so DIA, if I go into, it's tricky right now. You've got May at 31 days to go. You see that guy right there. You've got, June at 66 days to go. You see that guy right there. It's like, what do I do? Where do I go? Hey, you could kind of go with either one. I really feel like I don't necessarily go out of my way to get into the weekly options because some of you might be saying, well, wait a minute, Jim. There's a weekly option that has the exact number that we're looking for, 45 days to go. Eh, sometimes you still run into some liquidity issues, especially when you're dealing with one of the indexes that's not, the primary like prime cut liquidity slabs of meat that's out there that like an SPY would be, or even like a QQQ would be. I mean, DIA is kind of on the lower, the lower end of the top tier when it comes to liquidity, or maybe even the upper end of the second tier when it comes to liquidity. So I'm not going to go out of my way to do a weekly option in DIA just because the timing is exactly where I would want it to be. I'd rather just do the standard monthlies where there's going to be more activity, May 31 days to go, and then QQQ is 66 days to go. The way that I typically handle this situation, I think it could go either way. I think it's fine. But to give me some type of reference point for what I'm doing and why I'm trying to do it that way, I'll do my defined risk strategies in the earlier month. So the May cycle with only 30, 31, 32 days to go. Right now it's 31, but I'm giving you a principle that you can apply to any situation that might be similar to this one. I'll go defined risk. So vertical spreads, iron condors, vertical spreads and iron condors in the front month. Everything else has multiple expirations in it, like diagonals, calendars, things like that. I'll go front month on that. Anything that's undefined risk where, I could potentially get hurt the most and the positions that could, do the most damage to the P&L if I don't get a good move or if the stock is uncooperative, for some period of time, I'll put those in the back month. I'll stuff those guys in that 66 days to go cycle because the natural result of choosing a longer duration is watered down Greek exposure. It's going to be, less exposure to Delta, less exposure to, Vega, more exposure to Vega. So I don't know, maybe it doesn't work as simply as I wanted it to. But nevertheless, we move on. If I go to, so defined risk in the front month, undefined risk in the back month, even with that little Vega sniffer, I got to think about that a little bit more now. I'm like, wait a minute, there's higher Vega in the back month, but the Greeks are watered down. How does that work? I don't know. It sounds like some clever advertising at this point. But either way, with DIA, you know, with the stock at 378, I have to think about that a little bit more. With the stock at 378, I'm thinking we're going to do something defined risk in here. I don't really want to be selling straddles in DIA. I don't really want to be slanging short puts in DIA just because it's too high. The price of the index is too high. I'm not going to be able to do that and fit that into my portfolio easily. So instead, if I were to go into May with 31 days to go, you know, the tricky part is, let's say I wanted to do something bullish in DIA. So if I go in here, I delete that circle, man, I can go right with the at the money spread, right? Like if I sell the at the money put spread, you can see you've got a stock at 378. The at the money put spread then would be 375, 370. So I'd be selling 375. I'd be buying 370. Got the S&P is now unchanged on the day. And so Uncle Jay must have come out and walked back what he walked forward a couple of minutes ago. And so 375, if I sell a 375 and I buy a 370, I mean, this is just not a lot of premium, guys. This is just not a lot of premium at all. It's only $1.37, $1.38 on a $5 wide spread. The risk return there is just not super favorable, right? I mean, we are more than happy to risk two to make one, or, you know, risk two and a half to make one, whatever, when it comes to selling premium. But you have to have, you know, some line in the sand. I mean, this is almost a risking, and it might be right at about 2.5 to 1. That's a little long in the tooth for my liking. I like to maybe be like 2 to 1 or less than 2 to 1, maybe 1.5 to 1, more like a 60-40 type of split in terms of, you know, risk relative to return. Now, again, I mean, you talk to 10 different traders, you're going to get 10 different answers when it comes to this, because some people like to play the higher probabilities. Some people like to play the greater credits. I'm kind of more of a credit collector than I am, you know, a probabilities trader purely. I mean, everything is high probability when you're selling out of the money premium. You can see that right over here with the pop at 62%. You know, P50 is 82%. So we can almost round that up to 100 for our mental records. And so that all looks really good. The only thing I don't like is the credit collected at $1.40. And so I think I'm going to pass on this trade simply because it's just not giving me enough. It's just not giving me enough. I'm already on top of the stock price, you know, with the short strike at 375, the stock price at 378. I'm going to pass. You know, we've got earnings season coming up. Again, I'm not in a hurry. I'm not looking to force trades. I'm not looking to Zach Wilson this thing. Like, let's take our time. You know, we'll take a couple sacks if we need to. Well, that actually would be Zach Wilson. But nevertheless, we're going to wait. We're going to sit tight and just kind of, you know, see where the wind blows us in the next little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and let me delete all of those circles. So we're done with DIA. Let's actually talk about, so I don't think we're going to find any new trades today. So that's a bit of a bummer. But let's talk about this buying power situation, because I'm very intrigued, right? This is, futures options have just continued to be the gift that keeps on giving. Not only are they really, like, you know, strategically superior options in a lot of ways when it comes to, you know, a fit for your portfolio from a buying power standpoint alone, these things are amazing, right? Yes, the liquidity in MNQ, we know it's craptacular. But when you move beyond that, it's like, man, there's so much that you can do with these. Okay, well, as we continue to, you know, move further down the learning curve and dig deeper into the rabbit hole, we're just uncovering and unearthing these kind of new gems that are available inside of futures options. Well, this isn't necessarily a gem, but how does buying power expansion work with futures options? And talking with Tom yesterday, I think I mentioned this on yesterday's From Theory to Practice show, just briefly. I want to come back to this for a minute because I think this is really, really useful and helpful. NASDAQ almost unchanged now. This is crazy. It's almost like it's a high volatility market. It's almost like, you know, markets move and things change. But anyway, we usually get about 5 to 6x leverage relief for futures options. And we've seen that. We've seen that with MNQ. We've seen that with MES. We even saw it with MCL. Well, with MCL, I think it was only about 4 to 1 leverage relief. But 5 to 6x, you know, leverage relief with the futures options relative to the equity option. So MNQ relative to QQQ, MES relative to SPY. That's about what we've seen. Okay. Well, one of the questions I had for Tom, we didn't talk about this on the show yesterday because it just didn't come up. And Tom was just off the reservation talking about soybeans and talking about hedging things with, like, you know, block cheese and just all kinds of crazy stuff. But when the show was over, I was like, hey, you know, what kind of buying power expansion am I looking at? Because he mentioned on the show, you know, as you get closer to expiration, the span margining is kind of tied to the gamma on the position, and it can expand pretty rapidly. But he didn't give us a number. So after the show, I kind of pushed him because I'm like, hey, you know, I'm kind of learning all this as we go. Like, what kind of number am I looking at? He's like, well, you know, you might see buying power expansion to where instead of being 6x leverage relief, you're only 3x leverage relief. So essentially that would be your buying power doubling, you know, just from holding the same position and taking it closer to expiration. And I was like, all right, that's really, really, really helpful. Still, 3x leverage relief is really, really nice relative to QQQ, relative to SPY, right? Relative to the equity option alternative that you could choose. So as long as you're not leveraging up to the hilt, as long as you're not, you know, just kind of taking every little nook and cranny of extra buying power you have and just stashing it in these MNQ naked options and these MES naked options, like, you should be able to handle a little bit of buying power expansion on a position, even a doubling of that buying power expansion, you know, on the position. But here's what's interesting. So I was thinking about this and I was like, all right, how can we test this? How can we learn something about this right now? Right? Like, yes, obviously we're going to monitor these positions over the coming weeks and months and quarters and years and decades. I've been at Tasty now for 8.5 years. So we're almost going to be finished with our first decade. It's coming close to its own expiration here pretty quickly. How can we manage these things? Yes, we can do it over time, but can we do it now? Well, I kind of thought we could, but take a look at these results, guys. So I just don't really know what to believe. So if I go into MNQ, which is now down on the day, down 11 points, that's crazy. Russell 2000 now down 13. It was unched just a couple of seconds ago. That's really, really crazy. And so it's almost like that VIX at 19 means something. It's almost like, you know, the VIX, you know, being down 60 cents to 1860, like, that means a little something. That means some things are going to move, some markets are going to change, and some knickers are going to get twisted up. And that's kind of what's happening right now. But nevertheless, if I go into MNQ, you know, you've got MNQ at 17,850. Let me just pick an option that's going to be out of the money, that's going to comfortably be out of the money. So I'm just kind of picking this at random, because here's what I want to do. So let me choose the 17,700 strike. So this is in the 45 days to go cycle. So in thinking about how I could look at this right now, right? Again, we're going to monitor these things over time. So this is not, you know, monitoring these things over time and the buying power and the expansion or lack thereof, that's going to give us the most practical experience with what these things actually look like as markets move and we take these things closer to expiration. I thought, hey, what if we compare the same strike right now at 45 days to go, 21 days to go, 7 days to go, and 1 day to go? Isn't that basically like simulating what this position would feel like over time? Am I kind of making sense to you guys? Like, if I look at this with 45 days to go, 21.71, right, I should see some buying power expansion. If what Tom Salsoff told me is true, which again, it's 40 delta at this point, I should see some buying power expansion. I should see significantly more buying power holding the 1 day relative to the 45 day. Okay, well, let's take a look at it. And I think you're going to be surprised. Not that the 60 delta got the best of Tom Salsnoff, but that, man, there's just really not much of a buying power difference. And so I'm not sure what that means, because again, we're learning as we go here, but we're going to figure it out together as time goes on. So if I go in to a 17.7, again, I'm going to keep the strike the same. I'm going to keep everything the same. All I'm going to change is the days to expiration. So the buying power effect is $1,500. It's about what we would expect. Because if I did a similar type of strategy in QQQ, it's probably going to be like 8,000 or something like that. We've already looked at this a number of times, so I'm not going to look at that again right now. And I'm already at the halfway mark in the show. I want to get to y'all's questions because this is about the time, but I want to finish this thought for sure. So give me like no more than 8 more minutes. So $1,500 on the 17,700 with 45 days to go. Okay, let me just erase that circle. Let's clear away that trade. Let's go into the 21, or, well, there is no 21, so let's just choose 24. So I'm going to choose the 24-day cycle, which is May 10th. So I go 24 days, May 10th, right? So this is going to be similar to if I were to carry this from 45 to 21, right? Again, we're kind of fast-forwarding the process and kind of cheating, I suppose, and trying to simulate what that would feel like. But it makes a little bit of sense to me, at least in my mind. 24 days to go, the 17.7, look at the buying power. I don't know about y'all, but that's the same number, right? That's basically the same number, but I'm much, much closer to expiration. So the gamma is much, much higher on this position relative to 45 days ago. Now, to be fair, to not only Tom, but I mean everyone, just to be fair to the analysis, right? The gamma doesn't really pick up steam until we get inside of 21. It's really inside of 14. I mean, it's really like inside of 10 if you really want to get down to the brass tacks and kind of strip this guy down to the chrome. But either way, right, it's the same from 45 to 24. That's a little bit surprising. I would have expected there to be a little bit of expansion that took place there. All right, let's clear that away. Let's go into, let's now go to 7. Let's skip all the way down to 7. So this is going to be the April 23rd option that only has 7 days to go. Again, I'm going to choose the same strike. So clear away the drawings, open up April 23rd, 7 days to go. So now we are in the final week of this option's life. 17,700. Look at the buying power. Okay. The plot thickens a little bit, right? There's a little bit of expansion. It's $1,700. So for those of you that might be listening to the show, you can't see the numbers on the screen. We started off, the buying power was like 1550 or 1570, right? With 45 days to go for the 17,700 strike in MNQ. I went to the 24 days to go and it was basically the same buying power. I think it was like 10 more dollars, but essentially for all intents and purposes, it was the same number. Now I'm seeing a little bit of increase. Now it's up to 1700. So, you know, we have not expanded by double. We have not expanded by 50%. We have not even expanded by 20% at this point. We've expanded by like a tiny bit, like a 5 or 6% buying power expansion. So it's very, very, very minimal and very easy to absorb and handle at this point. Okay, that's 7 days to go. Let's now, to conclude the analysis, let's skip all the way down to 1 day to go. So this is it, right? This should be the hero of the story. When it comes to the buying power expansion on a position like this, where you don't have much time left and the gamma is essentially at its maximum point, 17,700, look at the buying power. Guys, it's barely any different. $1,765. So we started at, let's say, 1560. We've ended at 1760. So the buying power has expanded by what, 10%, 12%? So we're not talking about a doubling. We're not talking about just buying power expansion, just, you know, just going crazy, just going berserk. And so it's kind of interesting to see. I don't really know what this means, right? I'm not really sure where to compartmentalize this in my mind and how to categorize this. I'm still not so sure, you know, what buying power expansions are going to look like and feel like as we're holding these positions moving forward. And so we're just going to have to see it. We're going to have to experience it. Again, as I say to you all the time, there's just no substitute for being in the arena. There's no substitute for being in the arena. Well, we're in the arena now with these futures options. So we'll see what happens over the course of the next, you know, couple of weeks and couple of months and all those things. And so, you know, again, of course, if the market crashes and volatility shoots through the roof, I'm expecting the buying power to expand, but I expect it to expand for all my positions, QQQ, SPY, you know, Snowflake, you know, Snapchat. I mean, they probably won't be in business for yet, you know, maybe another week, maybe two at the most. But either way, UNG, Natty Light Ice, obviously going to have some buying power expansion amongst other things. I expect that. But here I would have expected the buying power to be greater, you know, when you're that close to expiration, but that's just not what we see. It's just not what we see just yet. So anyway, hopefully that helps a little bit. And, you know, it's something, man. It's another breadcrumb on the trail. It's another, I don't know. We're just going to have to wait and see. Maybe we can figure out together where to compartmentalize this guy and where to categorize it. But let me get to some questions, man. Let me see where you guys are at. Wow, we're almost done with the show. Oh, sorry about that, but I really wanted to get to that point. And so, let's see. Oh, Dillingham's in the house. What's going on there, Dillingham? He says, JP says we can continue the beatings until morale improves. Yeah, well, morale's definitely not improved. You've got S&P's now down almost 20. They were just up 20 a couple minutes ago. Now they're down 20. And you've got, wow, is volatility up on the day yet? So you've got volatility futures are down 50 cents, so still down. And then you've got the VIX is down 70 cents. So you've still got, you know, volatility getting walloped a little bit. But man, the market is red. And you've got pretty red across the screen. Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting stuff. So Raul's in the house. Good afternoon to all. What's going on there, Raul? I appreciate you, my friend. Got to sell with the VIX here. No, sell what? Like sell your stock? Sell premium? Sell the VIX itself? Like what are we selling, Raul? I mean, sell some premium. Ah, there we go. Maybe an Iron Condor and IWM, although I know Dr. Jim doesn't like Iron Condors these days. They're just, you know, I just think there's better options. I think, of course, if you're just starting out, I mean, it's a great strategy to learn how to play things neutral. You have the safety net, you have defined risk. I mean, those are all incredibly powerful things. You should start with that. But when we move along the learning curve, when we gain experience, we gain exposure, we've been in the arena for, you know, a bit of some time, then graduating beyond the Iron Condor, I think, is a natural goal that most people should have. I feel like, you know, naked strategies are going to do so much better for you, and they're just going to be so much more effective. But, you know, yeah, I mean, could you do an Iron Condor and IWM? Of course. You know, I mean, this is the time. And again, with the Ivy ranks across the board, whether you do an Iron Condor, whether you do a vertical, whether you do a strangle, a short put, a ratio spread, Jade Lizard, whatever you want to do, this is the time to sell premium. This is why we like to not use all of our capital all the time and leave some dry powder on the sideline. It's for a day exactly like this one, right? It's for a few days exactly like the last few days where volatility has spiked. We want to sell when volatility is high because, again, we're positioning ourselves to take advantage of, you know, those rapid moments of volatility contraction that, if history is any guide, are going to come again because they've always come before. And so, again, I mean, this could just be a stepping stone to VIX at 25, right? VIX at, you know, 28, VIX at 30. I mean, that's possible, of course. It's unlikely just because it would take a lot of, you know, it would take some significant volatility in the marketplace, some significant uncertainty, which is just more uncommon than kind of your ho-hum, you know, back and forth. You know, Uncle Jay said this, Kashkari said that, Bombastic come out and, you know, cancel both of them out. Like, that's just normal market behavior. But yeah, I mean, Raul, whatever you want to sell, I mean, today is the day. And so Dylan Birdie, hey, Dr. Jim, what's going on there, Dylan? What should I do with my extra cash in my TT account? Ask of BIL or call in to buy T-bills. What's your personal preference? Thanks, man. Great question. It's an excellent question. So, and I'm just going to tell you the truth from my vantage point. I have never bought SGOV or BIL. So I've never bought SGOV. I've never bought BIL. It's a project that I have that I'm trying to figure out, you know, where that might fit with maybe some potentially, you know, unofficial secret projects that I have working on behind the scenes that may become common knowledge at some point in the near to distant future. But nevertheless, BIL and SGOV, I know a lot of traders have done that. So if you've done that before, let Dylan know. I do, and I have bought T-bills though from Tastytrade. And it's a pretty easy process. All you do, just go to like the Treasury Direct Gov website, find the QSIP of the one that you want, and then just shoot them an email. Say, hey, I'm in account, you know, XYZ. I want to buy ABC T-bill with this amount of cash. I mean, they'll get it squared away for you that day. Like, they'll get it squared away for you that day. You'll have the buying power relief that you would have with BIL and SGOV. I think BIL and SGOV will probably be simpler because you don't have to call in and you don't have to do this, you don't have to do that. And so I have experience calling in. I don't have experience with BIL and SGOV, but again, theoretically, they should be some good options for you. And so Robert C, what's going on there, Robert C? Hey, Dr. Jim, could you explain how strangles are better than Iron Condors, man? Let's go. Let's go. Yes. Somebody about to ask me about selling premium for income. I'm ready, baby. As per Tasty Mechanics, is it because straggles, I think you meant strangles, we use stop loss, and with Condors, we see more max loss? Okay. This is a great question. It's a great question. So Robert C, it's actually a very simple answer. So when it comes to the effectiveness and when it comes to the power of selling premium over time, what I have seen in my experience, and the research backs this up too, like the research shows that selling premium in general, whether it be defined risk or undefined risk, is advantageous. But the research shows, if you just kind of, you don't even have to read between the lines. If you just look at enough segments, you'll see that undefined risk strategies are so much more powerful over time. You will absolutely see that. Now, you know, there may be a study that kind of highlights a $20 wide iron condor that kind of shows, oh, this is like super interesting. Like these look really good and all those kinds of things. But research is always like that. All research is like that. Like when you're looking at one specific element and you're trying to focus on one specific, you know, strategy in a certain context or circumstance, like you're kind of elevating and kind of exalting that one situation. And so that's very interesting. It challenges all of us to become better and challenges all of us to find where certain things fit. But if you think about, you know, a broader swath of all the research that we've done, you'll see that undefined risk strategies are just far more effective than defined risk strategies. And ask Tom, ask Tony, they'll say the exact same thing. Also, in addition to that, my own experience, not only my own personal experience, but my experience communicating with so many of you all over the years, like people that are in your situation, Robert C, people that are basically you, that just aren't you, right? There are thousands of you, tens of thousands of you at this point that I've communicated with via email, at the live events, whatever. The one common denominator across all the ones that have maintained a consistent, you know, longer term duration of success is a heavy emphasis on undefined risk. And so to me, it's like I put those two things together. I'm like, all right, we have the theoretical backing from all the research and just understanding the power of short premium. And then I have the practical application of all that from all these case studies. And not only that, but my own experience, my own anecdata, right? My own anecdotal experience. So I'm like, all right, I much prefer strangles over iron condors. And the reason why is, well, it's there's multiple reasons why. You know, I kind of gave you the big picture answer. The smaller picture answer, kind of going in now with a bit of a scalpel, is I'll give you two things. Number one, especially per Tasty Mechanics, think about what is one of the most beneficial things that we can do, or what is one of the most advantageous things that we can do. NASDAQ is now up 20 points. That's a little crazy. It's adjusting over time, right? Adjusting over time, giving our losers duration, right? Rolling out, rolling up, doing different things to, you know, maneuver our positions into more favorable spots so that we can hang in the trade and give it a chance to work out. Okay. The reality is with undefined risk strategies like a strangle, that's far easier to do than with defined risk strategies like an iron condor. Case in point, if you have an iron condor that's in the money on one side, the reality is you will very, very likely not be able to roll out for a credit. And so then you got to get a little creative. You either got to, you know, start rolling up or down, you know, different sides and kind of get a little, you know, potentially widening out wings and doing different, taking on more risk if you widen out a wing, right? To kind of manufacture a credit. Well, if you have an undefined risk strategy like a strangle, you can always roll out in time for a credit because you're extending the duration that you're willing to absorb undefined risk or the potential for undefined risk and unlimited losses on that position. You have to be compensated for that. That's really powerful. That's an incredibly powerful thing. And so when it comes to the adjustments over time, you know, there really is no comparison between undefined risk and defined risk. But then secondly, not even over time, but in the moment, right in here, I'll even show you. Let's actually use an example to kind of bring this to life. Let's go. Let me think here. Let me just go into like Starbucks, for example. I just want to pick something that's a little bit smaller in price, 96 IV rank. Wow, that's crazy. So if I go into Starbucks, Starbucks has earnings coming up on May 7th. And so, wow, it's pretty wild. So if I go into like, let's just go into like June with 66 days to go. So let's say that I wanted to do an iron condor in, well, actually, let's start with a strangle. Let's start with that, actually. Let's say you've got Starbucks at 85, almost 86 bucks a share, right? If I sell the 80 put and I sell the 90 call, this is a fairly tight strangle, right? You can see, I mean, we're at, you know, the 26 delta on the put side and a 36 delta on the call side. I'd probably want to go wider than this for the purposes of like an actual strangle, but I'm choosing these strikes for a reason. And you'll see why here in just a minute. So if I do an 80, 90 strangle, take a look at some of the metrics on this trade. My credit collected's $4. I mean, that's obviously incredibly large. My, for a strangle, my buying power effect is only 1200 bucks. It's very reasonable, right? Very reasonable. The pop on this is 60%. The P50 is 84 to 85%. And look at the theta on the position. Delta, I'm a little bit bearish, but pretty close to neutral. So I'm pretty neutral slash slightly bearish. But look at the theta. I get over $5 a day just for this position existing, right? Just for this position just being there, I'm going to get paid $5 a day. Now, of course, it's not somebody giving you, you know, a $5 bill to put in your back pocket. We know it doesn't work quite like that. But over time, that's what we're playing. We're playing the time decay. Okay. Look at how things are going to change when I spread this off on both sides and create an iron condor. Still going to be a neutral strategy, but pay close attention to probability, credit collected, and theta. So let me go ahead and, well, actually, I'll just leave all of these circles on the screen. If I buy the 75 put and I buy the 95 call, so I now have an iron condor on my hands. Take a look at how things have changed. Number one, my credit collected got cut in half. So now I'm down to $2.20. My theta is down to $1.50. That's actually pretty high in the world of iron condors. But look at my pop. My pop is now a 50-50 proposition, and my P50 is 64%, which is good. That's better than 50-50, but it's a far cry from what we saw with the strangles. And so, Robert C., great question. This is why I'm such a proponent of undefined risk strategies over defined risk strategies. Case in point, a strangle over an iron condor. Even talking about not only the strategy right now, but sometimes, you know, but some of the mechanics over time with rolling out and all those things. Now, was that a complete discussion? No, but I feel like that was a pretty decent, attempt at an answer for you. So hopefully that helps you a little bit and gives you a few things to think about. So David Gallimore is in the house. What's going on there, David Gallimore? Ooh, David Gallimore, man, I really, my heart goes out to your short, deep, out of the money puts. I hope that you're hanging in there, my friend. David Gallimore says, Dr. Jim, I am net short SPX puts, right? And therefore short volatility with positive delta. That's right. Is it better to reduce delta short SPY or buy VXM to deal with volatility itself? Right. So to have volatility exposure. So I would say, So this is a great question, by the way, because you've recognized the conundrum that you're in, right? You're short volatility, which is good. I mean, that's fine. That's what we want as premium sellers, but you also happen to be positive delta. And so, you know, when the market is drifting higher, when the market is grinding up and, you know, just kind of falling into its natural tendency to rise over time, that's great because you get paid really quickly. The puts dry up really fast, whether they're deep out of the money or not. Like, you just get paid really quickly. And that's a really, really good combination. The problem is in markets like the one that we're in right now, where it's like, all right, this downside's kind of being peppered a little bit. It's like, you get hurt on the volatility and you get hurt on the delta. And so this is, by the way, the reason why a lot of traders inside of the Tasty universe prefer to hold a little bit of short delta, because it gives you a little bit of a natural hedge against the volatility expansion. Of course, for every gimme, there's a gotcha. And the gotcha with holding short delta is you get kind of hammered every day, like most of the time, except for this little 72-hour stint where you've actually, you know, been able to celebrate a little bit. So just a quick little side note. But what should you do? I think you could go either way. I really do. I also think, though, there's a pretty clear winner in this fork in the road. I don't like buying volatility futures or buying, like, you know, VIX calls or whatever, because of volatility's natural tendency to contract over time. I don't necessarily love, you know, inventorying and holding long volatility. It's a really hard trade to hold because you kind of just get ground to dust over time. But you can't sell volatility either, at least not straight from the volatility vehicles, because then on a day when the VIX, you know, jumps 15, 20, 25%, you get absolutely crushed. So you're not going to do that either. I would much prefer to see you, you know, trim your long delta a little bit. I think that's the best move here. Take some positions off, trim the long delta, you know, somehow either by taking positions off or adding some bearish positions into the mix, whichever makes the most sense with your capital allocation and things like that. But that's what I would do, David Gallimore. I think that's going to be your best pathway forward through the forest. And so that would be my call there. But I don't think buying VXM futures, micro VIX futures, I don't think that's the worst play ever. I know some traders also like to do that. And so B Barlson's in the house. I'm feeling the burn in Tesla today. What is Tesla doing today? Are they getting crushed? Yeah, they're down 5.5. They're down to 156. Oh man, that's pretty low. That's pretty low for Tesla. Wow, that's crazy. So Tesla down $5 today, which is wild. B Barlson, bonds certainly aren't helping me either. So you must be long a little bonds, I would imagine. Bonds are now only down 10 ticks. So they're making their way back up to unched. And so, man, the market's been incredibly whippy the last couple of hours. So that's a great market if you're in there, if you're looking for, you know, if you're picking up some quarters in front of the steamroller, this is a great market for you to get a few extra ones before they iron you out next week. And so that's good. That's good. That'll help you out a little bit. And so Harold says, he said by not saying it, interest rates for longer. Okay, so this is Uncle Jay. Until something breaks for us to step in and ease the economy. Furthermore, enjoy interest rates of 5%. See, this is what I'm saying, right? I've been saying from day one. I said this before Powell said this. I said, you can't have the most aggressive rate hike schedule in the history of rate hike schedules and not have some stuff break. And now he just said, either by saying it or not saying it, whatever Harold was trying to say there, we're going to wait until some stuff breaks. And so that's what I'm saying, right? That's my boy. And so he is absolutely on our side here. Not that I want stuff to break necessarily, but I do enjoy being right from time to time, which hasn't happened very much the last 18 months. And so I wouldn't mind a victory lap or two or five. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see if that actually is what transpires. I still have my doubts. And so let's see. Robert C. and David Gallimore. There you go. Making friends. That's what I like to see. That's very, very good. Matt Johnson, markets are doing great. I agree. This is a great market for traders. This is a there's lots and lots of things to do here. And so let's see. Harold. Harold's not liking the Zach Wilson jokes, or maybe he does. That's my quarterback. Oh, yeah. There you go with the TO, the TO GIF. The TO GIF is classic. Absolutely classic. And so let's see. Got Robert and David talking about portfolio margin. That's good. Let me try to get to one more really quick. Let's see. Oh, David Gilmore says gets about 97.8% of Netlick and Escov. So there you go. That's awesome. And then Theta Trader says, Dr. Jim, I'm just dropping in a check on your welfare in the aftermath of the Jay Powell comments. But sadly, I now have to go to work and earn additional monies. That's right. I mean, those back alley, you know, crowns, they're not going to put themselves on. Like, they need you to do that, right? And so, I mean, you got the goods when it comes to that. And then he says, keep Harold safe during this difficult time. I don't know what you're talking about, man. My man's clearly in first place in the AL East with a pretty comfortable lead, if I'm not mistaken. And so so that is, yeah. So that's good stuff, though, Theta Trader. Thanks for dropping by. And thanks for checking out the show today. But I'm just about out of time. I almost made it through all the comments, I think, too. And so if I missed your comment there at the end, like Omid and Harsha, come back tomorrow, guys. Or not tomorrow. Tomorrow I've got today's assignment. But come back on Thursday, drop it in early, and I'll try to get through it as quickly as I can. But I got to run and get you guys to Jamal. I appreciate you guys, man. I appreciate you guys so much. If I can ever help you in any way, please email me. I am jschultz@tastylive.com. Or we can connect on Twitter. I'm @jschultzf3. I would love to hear from you guys on there as well. But stay tuned. We've got Jamal coming up next with Engineering the Trade. In the meantime, guys, trade them small, train them heavy, and stay generous. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.